I'm going to read this poem by Teddy Macker. I think I'm going to start with this. It's called A Poem for My Daughter. It's rather long, but it's really just long with all these little sections of wisdom that they share for their daughter. So I'm just going to read these little sections throughout the talk tonight. And it starts with one of the wisdoms he says to her, his daughter is, it seems, actually, I don't know if Teddy's a male, so we're just going to call them they. One of the things they share with their daughter is, it seems we have made pain some kind of mistake, like having it is somehow wrong. Don't let them fool you. Pain is a part of things. But remember, dear Ellie, the compost down in the field. If the rank and the dank and the dark are handled well, not merely discarded, but turned and known and honored, then they one day come to be beds of rich earth, home even to the most delicate rose. I think that's a good way to start talking about mental formations. Because we're going to talk a little bit about this generally. It's what we're going to spend the month with. But before we get too far into mental formations and what they are, we have to go back to ignorance again. Take a step there, because mental formations are basically conditioned upon ignorance. They come, they arise out of this ignorance. And the ignorance that we talked about last month arises out of, it's connected to or conditioned in relation to suffering. So we have to sort of make this kind of smooth transition from ignorance to mental formation, lest we just begin to think about mental formations and forget all about the conditioning that they're based upon. So we want to keep it close together. It's sort of like remembering that even though we're going to stretch this conversation out for a year, it actually happens like that. It happens that quick, even though we are talking about it over the course of a year. So don't let the time and the stretching and the kind of, we're not even going to get to suffering till December. Don't let that fool you into thinking that somehow or another there's this big window in between one link and another. It's not. They're glued together. And I'm hoping some of what we talk about tonight will help kind of bring that out a little bit. So when we think about some difficulty, some moment in time where we're having a difficulty or we're in what we would call suffering, whatever that suffering looks like, we think when we apply practice, I'm going to apply my practice to this moment of suffering. Like somehow or another, let me breathe in, breathe out, steady myself, get still, like the practice in support of our suffering right now. And we're going to talk a little bit in a minute about that is a skillful means. But when we think about dependent origination, we are missing something in the relationship between practice, suffering, and ignorance. Because the suffering we are experiencing in any given moment is not connected to current suffering. It's connected to the conditioning and the ignorance of our previous suffering. And it just happens to be showing up in this moment in time. So another way to begin to think about this is our past times of clinging or craving or being attached to something is the grounding, the conditioning, the forerunner of the ignorance we are in a present moment where suffering is arising. And if we think too much, because we practice in the present moment, if we think too much between the suffering that we are currently on and how I can practice, we get trapped in making practice become a fix-it, become the thing that I use to fix my life. And that I am, this is really my take on this, but that is what I want to talk about as being I'm just going to say, I just think it's the wrong way to look at practice. It's not what I would say is the way that Buddha was pointing to practice. So if you think about it, when that night that he awoke, I think on these things often. So he is sitting there by himself. And the only way I can kind of help you see this, so close your eyes, you're sitting here by yourself. We're not in this room, you're just sitting by yourself, and everyone that you can think of has left you. And in this moment, in this contemplative way, you begin to consider this idea that this clinging and craving and being attached to something is what's causing you so much difficulty. Not anything else. Not whether it's raining or it's hot or the ground is hard, but the craving and the clinging for your conditions to somehow be different. That craving and clinging is the root of your suffering. It is the root of it. And when you are aware of that, you can let go of the craving and the clinging. When you are not aware of it, then you won't let go. So the reason why I think this is so important that we step back and connect this to ignorance is that if we are clinging, I mean, if we are suffering in this moment, there's got to be some clinging and craving from it. It can't exist. So if no clinging and craving, no attachment before, we've sort of left that clinging and craving, there's no ignorance. And if there's no ignorance, there's no suffering. Suffering arises out of ignorance. The chances that we can see that ignorance is diminished by the clinging and the craving we had before. So there's a way in which our basic nature to cling and crave after what we want creates the very field in which we're going to suffer over and over and over and over and over. And we can't see it. So what we're talking about tonight is going on before we even become conscious of it. That's how far removed it is. This is all based on past causes and conditions. even though we're going to talk about it as if it's here right now. That's why I think this is so important to begin to see into and actually practice with, not as an intellectual thing, because when the Buddha was sitting there, he didn't have an intellectual discourse like we're having right now about this clinging and craving. He saw it in the reality, and he saw it so clearly that he was not picking it up anymore. Something he said, something about, oh, house builder, I see you now. I see you. Know what you're trying to do. That's it. You're done. If we're going to end suffering in this idea of ending suffering, then we have to be able to see our past conditioning that is leading to the present moment we're in suffering. Not see the suffering and figure out a way to get out of it, but to see that the suffering I'm currently experiencing is based on something else. And I have to look for that. And in order to look for that, I got to let that suffering be the way it is and investigate it, not fix it, get rid of it, clear it out, make it go away and be not suffering. Here's what Teddy, what's some more stuff of what they say to their daughter. God comes to you disguised as your life. Blessings often arise as trouble. In French, the word blessure means to wound and relates to the old English bletzen. I think that sounds as bletzian. To sprinkle with blood. And in Sanskrit, there is a phrase to carry with you wherever you go. Sarvan amnan. Everything is food. Every last thing. So I'm pointing here to this idea that if we're on this path and we're doing this work, we're stepping into another kind of territory here, not some territory where we can try to make ourselves feel a little better or make ourselves somehow have this kind of life that we want that looks like, you know, that life that I thought of when I was much younger, and this is the life I want to make. We're stepping into different territory. We still may be going after the life we've always wanted. That's not a problem. But there's something else riding along with us, and that's what I want to talk about, what these mental formations are. They're referred to in Pali as sankharas. And when you look it up, there's like all kinds of definitions for sankharas. Some people call them volitional impulses. Some people call them fabrications and habits and impressions or imprints that are on the mind, on the body. And they're always intertwined with this word karma or action. So I thought about this and thought about this and thought about this, and I'm not really, to be honest, I'm not sure I can describe this correctly. But I'm going to give you my take on it. You can always think, oh, that's Tori's take on it. So mental formations themselves are not action. They're not acts themselves. Not the way we think of action. We think of action as a doing, as something that I did or we do or we the impulse in thinking, the movement of the body, some act that we actually do. But instead, you can think of mental formations as setting in motion some act to be happening. And I think of the connection between mental formations would be more like intention, thinking of it as intention. But in this practice, intention and actions are so intertwined that once the intention is set in motion, the action is also set in motion. It's almost like if you steal under the law, once you form the intent to steal, so you walk past all the cash registers, then the police or the security guard can stop you. And people say, but I didn't get outside. But you don't have to get outside. You just have to have that intent not to pay for it and get past the cashiers. It's so upsetting to me that now if I have something in my hand, I won't go past the cashiers. I'll put it down somewhere, go get a basket, and then go back and pick it up. But it's that kind of intention and action are all intertwined together. And it begins to make sense as we go further along here. Because this dependent origination would be about learning to recognize, or more importantly, begin to accept how conditioned we live, how conditioned our way of living is. If our actions are so intertwined with intention and intertwined with ignorance, then the conditioning that's set before we even become conscious of it is already set in motion. Can you see that? I'm not trying to say this so that you think it's all futile. It is a little futile, but it's not all futile. But I do want to put in a plug for just how steeped in this we are, so that when we're applying practice, and we're going to talk about practice in a little bit, when we're actually applying that to practice, we are applying it into this with more wisdom and understanding of how practice is going to support us. So in some respects, one of the difficulties with mental formations or these imprints, these volitional acts or this intention are habits, is that it comes out of I'm looking at my own practice. This is arising out of my own mistaken belief that my habitual way of seeing something is reality. Reality is the conditioning. Mental formations are real, but they are not reality. They are the imprint that we put on reality. They are the our impulsivity or, you know, beliefs about reality. But they are not reality. What is reality is that everything that we believe and project in front of us is coming out of conditioned understanding. That's what becomes reality. So these sankharas, I'm going to say sankharas or impulses or fabrications or habits, these mental formations, these imprints, or somebody called them impressions upon what we think the world is. They can be physical, verbal, or mental. And if they're physical, it means that some information comes in through the physical body through a sense door. And we believe that imprint. So it would be like You go into work. You see this person that you already have this image of that you and them don't get along. But you got your practice. You're going to be all nice. You'll be good. I'm going to be nice and friendly and kind because I'm working on it. So you see them and they look at you and you smile at them and you say, good morning. I hope you're having a good day. And they just walk right on by. So you believe what you see is that they just dissed you. You believe that. You don't have any idea if that's true. You actually don't have any idea if they even saw you. But because you believe that they were looking at you and you spoke to them, they certainly should have heard you and they just dissed you. That's why I don't like them, because they're always acting like that. And it just reinforces our future conditioning and difficulty and suffering with this person. Because what we never question is if our belief is right. We just know it is. That mental formation is right. And that's the way we continue to operate. So everything we see in the world, everything we hear, everything we think all of that is real. And it's, at least I get us off into some kind of nebulous sci-fi movie world. It makes perfect sense that we would believe it. What we are trying to do in practice is to begin to find a way to recondition how we are in the world, recondition how we see things. Oh, there was something else that I found. I didn't know this, but I found this. So there are also some formations. So the physical formation, that's what I was going to say, is made up of stuff that comes in through the sense doors. Verbal formations then would be related to things that come through our speech, hearing and saying and words. And then the mental formations that are mind come through our thoughts or our intentions. Comes through beliefs or expectations, things like that. But something I didn't know is that there are some meritorious formations that set up good karma. So meritorious or beneficial thoughts, beneficial actions, beneficial speech, these kinds of things can set up meritorious formations in the mind or in the body, and it leads to good karma. And there is non-meritorious formations, things that are not so good, leads to bad karma. But the thing I thought was nice is there's a fixed, unmoving formations. Fixed, unmoving. And it leads to special karma. And I think that fixed, unmoving formations is when we come to certain places in our practice, when we have sort of unhooked some level of greed, hatred, and delusion. When we've unhooked some level of defilement and we're not going back on that. In fact, I read somewhere that it's only a Buddha or an Arahant that does not have some degree of ignorance in their intentions or their mental formations, their volitional acts. There's some degree in ignorance threaded in everything we do. Unless you have completely uprooted all these defilements that we live with. So So let me look a little bit more at what Teddy was saying to their daughter. They say the Navajo people, it's said, intentionally, I might add, obvious flaws into their sacred quilts. Why? It is there, they say, in the mistake, in the imperfection through which the Great Spirit moves. They say life is easy, yes. Life is hard, also. Life is simple, yes. And life is complex. We are tough, yes, but we are also fragile. Everything's external, perfect. Everything's externally perfect, but help out if you can. I like that. Okay, so our sankharas, our volitions, our mental formations can be good or bad. But just like ignorance, they're all connected to the past. They come from the past forward. So wholesome sankharas, so wholesome mental formations, they can bring out beneficial results in the future. And unwholesome sankharas bring about painful results in the future. But good or bad, they're all conditioned to some degree on ignorance. I read somewhere where it was trying to describe this and the way that they described it. It's sort of like this. When we do something, some good intention, and that intention leads to a good outcome, and then we begin to create good meritorious karma, we end up creating this conditioned way of having mental formations that are, I don't like to use the word good, but let's just say positive, or they're beneficial, wholesome. Let's say I'm going to do an act of kindness. That's the way I'm going to be. I'm just going to be kind. It's a vow I took many years ago. I'm going to be kind all the time. I'm not kind all the time. But I'm going to be kind all the time. That's what my intention is. So I try and I do all of these kind things as often as I can. Kind, 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 kind. And when I'm not kind, I vow, okay, I'm going to be kind next time. Kind, 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 kind. Over time, in this gradual unfolding, my sankharas, the kindness becomes conditioned as part of the imprint in my mental formations. Part of my sankharas, part of my volition, part of who I am, or not I, but the proverbial I, part of how I act, let's say it like that, becomes conditioned on kindness. Not because I'm kind all the time in this moment, but because of all the kindness that has happened in the past and begins to come forward. Before I made this vow that I was going to work on being kind all the time, I wouldn't say I was kind. I didn't try to be mean, but I didn't try to be kind, if you can see the difference of what I'm saying. I just was me. And however it was, I just was that way. I didn't set in motion this intent to be kind. So basically, all of my actions were based on my family cultivated actions, based on the way my family acted. we weren't bad people. We weren't mean. We didn't go around hurting people intentionally. But if I look at who I am now and I look at who I was then, this intentional act of kindness has been a game changer in who I am. I am nothing like the person I used to be. But this change in who I am doesn't come from me. I guess I could say, I never could have made myself the person I am right now. I could not make myself this way. I mean, to be honest, I always thought I was kind. I can only tell you that I wasn't kind because I can look back on how I used to be and know that I wasn't as kind as I am now. And what I called kind back then, I would not consider kind. I would not consider myself mean, but I definitely would consider myself self-centered and pretty selfish. So this kindness that has sort of come to me now has come because years ago I made this vow to be kind. And even when I wasn't kind, I still kept this vow to be kind. And over this time is the way that Sankara's work, this imprinted conditioning began to change. The difficulty is that if you can begin to see the implications of what this mental formation is that if I try to be kind in the present moment, and I'm not, I'm now setting in motion the likelihood that I won't be kind in the future, because the suffering is going to come. And there's this kind of way in which we're spinning in this ever-spinning wheel that keeps us doing the same things over and over and over and over. And we keep saying, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to do something different. But yet we keep doing the same things. So I want to talk a little bit about practice before I run out of time. Because what I have learned, what I have seen in my own practice, is that what happens is this is truly a gradual unfolding. Practice is not a strategy or a solution for suffering. It's a gradual unfolding and a changing of the nature of how we see things. And that shows it shows up in these mental formations more so than I think any of the other links. Because I think as soon as we turn the door to next month and we're in consciousness, we've now fast-forwarded into the present moment. But here, where we are last month and this month, we're still in this unconscious, non-aware conditioning that is going to propel how we are in the future. So I think the role of practice when it comes to these sankharas becomes really, really important. Since sankharas are connected to our subsequent action, then in some respects you can begin to see how this is really all about the Eightfold Path. This is really all of this. We talk about it as dependent origination, but actually it's all wound up in the Eightfold Path, and the Eightfold Path gets triggered in these mental formations. So all of our actions are based then on how do we live out right action, right effort. And that is the nature of the ethical conduct part of the Eightfold Path. And all it means is, in the moment, so even though I want you to begin to hear that this is coming from the past, it's coming from the past, and it meets this moment. So in the moment, if you try to judge your behavior as me, it doesn't make any sense. If you can see this, because everything you're doing right now is coming from past. And it's already here. There's no point in taking credit for any good that you do. You can't control how these imprints are going to show up. And there's no point in taking blame for it. So instead, what I think the Buddha was pointing to is that all of our good karma, all of our good actions are going to be based on some previous wisdom or understanding. Somewhere in our practice, we got some understanding, some wisdom. And that wisdom is tucked in the back. And the mind brings it out in some present moment. And so we begin to change some of our behaviors. Sometimes the wisdom doesn't come out and we don't change our behaviors. So in any given moment, if you notice unskillful, unwholesome actions, then right then and there, you try to abandon that unskillful, unwholesome action. Not because you are looking at yourself, but because the action itself is going to propel more suffering. So we try to abandon unskillful behavior, and we try to prevent that unskillful behavior that hasn't arisen to arise again. Just this vow, not going to do that anymore. You make amends and take responsibility for any unskillful or unwholesome actions that are happening in this moment. Because we're responsible for whatever acts that we commit. At the same time, if you notice that there's no skillful behavior, actions, intentions, then you begin to cultivate, like me setting this vow to be kind, setting this vow to be kind, setting this vow to be kind. I don't know what kindness looks like. I'm just setting this vow to be kind. I don't know whether I'm kind in the moment or not. But if I notice that I could be kind, I'm going to be kind. If I notice that I'm being kind, I'm going to hold that kindness. And I'm not going to pretend or be bashful about it. Oh, no, I'm not really being kind. Yes, I am being kind. And if I notice I'm not being kind, the moment I notice it, I want to stop. I want to stop whatever harm I'm doing and vow I'm going to be kind. Start all over again. The reason why I'm trying to say it like this is because what you then begin to notice is that if you make it less about you and more about the wisdom, which would be right view, right intention, less about me trying to be a certain way and more about what the wisdom aspect of the path, which is these three right intention. Well, seems like I'm getting a little lost here. Barbara should get a little poem. Let me see if I can settle for a moment. This is a good time. Work on becoming a native of mind, a native of heart. No thought, no feelings could ever be bad. It's just another creature. Knowing this, knowing this down to the marrow, you could save, my dear, much needless strife. No matter what you do, no matter what happens, it's impossible to leave the path. Let me say that one more time. That's what he says. They say, no matter what you do, no matter what happens, it's impossible to leave the path. Believe it or not, dear Ellie, some folks carefully imagine hideous gods tearing at flesh, clawing at faces, eating human hearts, and drinking cups of blood. Why? To shake the hand with the whole catastrophe, to cultivate the noble yes. Many of those skillful means, according to this tradition, there are 84,000 skillful means, 84,000 tactics of wastefulness, 84,000 ways to become spatially alive, and 84,000 ways to be at home in your life and in this world. And many of those skillful means are like this one: enlightenment through endarkment. Oh, let me see if I can come back to where I was. I think what I'm trying to point to is that when you begin to put in ignorance and our mental formations together to where they are, this past conditioning that's going to influence our present moment, and our present moment is then going to influence our future actions. When you begin to put that together, what you can begin to see is it's more about our practicing in the present moment than it is about who we ultimately become. We can't control who we ultimately become. I never could be kind when I wanted to be kind. The idea is you just practice kindness in the present moment, regardless of what's showing up. And somehow the mental formations, the wisdom and the mental formations begin to imprint and habitually affect how kind we are. That our kindness arises out of that conditioning that comes from our continuous practice in the present moment. And in that present moment, when we practice kindness, whether we want to be kind or not, we just begin to set in motion conditions for future arising of kindness. So this is, in some respects, how the only way to hold last month and this month, I believe, in a way that makes sense, so we don't get too abstract, is to hold it as practice. Meaning that if we try to hold this the way culturally the society we live in, this idea, the way we even talk about karma, like we are responsible for, or what is it, this idea that our karma is going to catch up with us and somehow some negativity is going to come through to us. Or somehow or another, I hear it in students all the time in interviews, this idea that I keep doing the same thing wrong again. I keep messing up all the time. I keep trying to be in the practice, but I keep messing up. That idea is what I think is hurting us. Instead, I think the last month and this month, what it's pointing to is that this conditioned behavior is so universal, it's so absolute, that it is not about trying not to be a certain way. And instead, all you're trying to do is, in this moment in time, remember this moment is conditioned on behavior before. So if you notice that some unskillfulness has arisen, it's not you, it's the conditioning of before. So we're going to abandon that unskillfulness. We're going to use this moment as a way to practice the Eightfold Path. That's it. That's why I think Buddha, that's why he said the way leading to the end of suffering is through the Eightfold Path. It's because we're so conditioned and so imprinted and so caught in the volitional acts of our prior behavior that if you're as old as I am, we got some problems. Maybe my 3-year-old granddaughter can kind of work it out, but she's got to hope that she gets taught some good wisdom. But if she doesn't, she's kind of stuck. Can you see that? She's stuck in whatever behavior patterns we raise her with. And those are the behavior patterns that are going to set in motion everything she does for years and years and years and years. And then she'll stumble along onto the path like we did. And she's got a long line of conditioned behavior before her. It's all imprinted on her. So you can save yourself a lot of grief if you don't try to apply the practice as some strategy to make you better, some solution that's going to fix all that stuff I did. And instead, look at the practice as, how do I bring in the imprint of this dhammic kind of values, the ethical, this ethical actions, or the Eightfold Path itself? How do I bring in more wisdom that can see and understand that this moment is conditioned by previous actions, and in this moment set in motion how I want the future to be? Not as how I want to be in the future, but set in motion conditioning that will at some point unfold in my way. Unfold in a beneficial way. And then I think we should trust this last piece. We should trust that as time goes on and this unfolding begins to happen, we will have fixed, unmovable formations, fixed, unmovable understandings, fixed and unmovable wisdom that creates this kind of special meritorious karma that then begins to have an impact on our lives. Maybe I'll end with the last few words from Teddy Macker. They say, life, they're still talking to Ellie, life appears to be fundamentally ambiguous. Wily, every colored, unpin-downable, and for evidence of this, spend time with trees. Over and over they say, there is no final word. and big decisions, decisions concerning relationships, concerning children, concerning death, are rarely made cleanly. In general, be weary, even if just a little, of talk of purity, of goodness, and of light. To love everything, not just parts of it. To love all of yourself, not just certain traits. To rest in not knowing. To carry the cross and to lay your burden down. To savor the medicine blue of moon, the fierce sugar of tangerine, and to be a Christ unto others, a Christ unto oneself. To laugh, to be shameless, wild, and silly. To know fully, headlong, without compunction, the ordinary magic of our beautiful human bodies. These seem like worthwhile pursuits and long life tasks. By way of valediction, dear Ellie, I pass along some words from our many gracious teachers. Eden is the imperfect of our paradise, and all is grace. So let's sit for a moment. So I hope that wasn't too confusing, but we'll see if there's any questions. Yeah.
Me?
Rob. Look at you. First night.
Is it on?
Yeah.
Should be. Is it on now? Again.
How about now?
Ooh. There it is.
Hello.
Perfect.
Where do these mental formations come from, and should I investigate them?
Well, the mental formations themselves, that's what they arise out of ignorance. And they're based in this conditioned, habitual way to be. So they come out of the body, sense doors, the mind picks something up and immediately has this impression, imprint, some kind of intentional reaction to it, comes out of our speech, comes out of our thoughts. All of these data points come that open these doors, but the quality of it is not connected to the present moment. It's connected to the ignorance from the previous moment, and we don't necessarily see that imprint has just happened. So of course you're going to investigate it, though. I mean, to get to the second part of it, you want to investigate everything, but the way to investigate it is to begin to feel into some of our impulsive behavior and go against that impulse. So it's connected to this realizing in present moment time, is this skillful, is this not skillful, noticing whether or not you can cultivate and sustain skillful kinds of wholesome behavior. It's I guess what I'm trying to point to is the mental formations themselves aren't necessarily the action. They're the intentions before it. So one other thing you could think about is to think about what intention, what's the back intention, assumption, beliefs, expectations we have before we do something. You could begin to see it like that and see how much of our intentions are based in some kind of greed or some kind of aversion or some kind of confusion, and how much of it is based in this kind of selfless compassion that is not seeking any kind of benefit and reward. That would be right action. Lauren.
Well, I've been trying to figure out why there would be this process of mental formations, and it's so part of the human being. And I was wondering if it had to do with a survival for the self, for the ego, to maintain, you know, the comfort and pleasure and survival. So these formations, this would be a process in the being to get what it wants and be mm-hmm. itself and be an entity and survive and maybe dominate over, you know, it's just a survival thing. And then, so, you know, it wants what it wants and it wants pleasure and comfort, and it's centered on itself, and it needs to find its place in the surroundings mm-hmm. and in the community. So it these actions and speech and mental thinking develop to, you know, keep it alive and growing and powerful and not vulnerable, and it just keeps going. And so, but it's based on ignorance that it can keep on going, that it is separate, that it can find lasting, you know, it just, this is what it is based on, that it will, that's its goal, you know, to be a self, to have satisfactoriness, and to keep it, and it will be the same. So it perpetuates that, but then if you go down the Eightfold Path, if you come to some point where you see this is suffering, or for some reason you decide that it's better to think of other people and to not put this survival first, you think, you know, I'm going to stop and I'm going to be something else is my value. There's something else more important. So you stop that behavior to the best of your ability. You start doing what you said. You start doing these wholesome actions, and it creates non-ignorance.
Wisdom.
So mm-hmm. the next, that condition, you've just started by your mental formations now, which are wholesome. You've started a new basis for your action, your mental formations, and they create more non-ignorance to have to come from. Something else is coming from it, so it's a new path, and it's going, you know, it's a new path that isn't based on non-ignorance, and then it becomes, you know, you're not the center of attention, and you see that. But it's just the same process. It's just not based on, because that's what our mind does, but it's finding that this is a better way.
Yeah. Well, there's one thing I would throw in there, is that this racing mind, this survival mind that you're talking about, the difficulty is the clinging and the craving, that this swing around attachment is what it is. So whenever we, if we didn't have any attachment, no craving and clinging, we wouldn't have any ignorance.
So the letting go has to be, so what, where does that come in?
The letting go itself can come in any one of those links that we're going to talk about. But that let, that those links are all happening because ultimately it leads to some kind of a grasping on. It leads to some kind of an attachment. And that attachment is setting in motion the likelihood that we're going to attach again. That's, it's this, it's this,
Is that where mindfulness comes in? I mean, if you, if you develop mindfulness so that you are just in the present and you keep going back to this moment.
As long as, I guess what I'm trying to point to, as long as you're not trying to use the moment to make yourself better. As long as you're not trying to use this moment to somehow get it right, do it right, be good, be perfect. That is when, that is the way we try to use practice, is somehow or another, I'm going to practice so in the present moment I'm going to be okay. But we have a long line of past conditioning that is swooping in on us. Instead, what you when you think about the mental formations, they are pointing to this subconscious intentional flow that's coming out of ignorance. It's coming out of our previous craving and clinging and attachment. So instead, the moment, our present moment practice is not to fix this moment, but just to practice in this moment. That's it. Just practice.
Practice what?
Just practice the Dhamma, meaning that it's our right effort. So practice being aware, is there skillful, wholesome action in this moment in time? Am I living? So think of the Eightfold Path in three segments. The segment over here that's built on concentration, building samadhi, that building of samadhi, that practicing of right mindfulness, right concentration, right effort, that is so that we can feel the subtleness of these impressions, that we can feel the subtleness of harm and suffering. We can feel that. So we're cultivating that just so we can feel it. Not so I can feel it in this moment. Just so I can feel suffering and harm, and I can feel that subtleness at some point, that subtle impulsiveness that happens, or as the Tibetans call, that urge to correct. Our right action, this middle section of the training, speech, precepts, all of that, right livelihood, that's really about where the rubber meets the road, this kind of in the moment, I'm just going to cultivate skillful means. I'm going to cultivate skillful actions, and I'm going to cultivate actions that are non-harming in any given moment. It doesn't mean you're not going to do any harm. But if you do harm and this practice is getting strong, you're going to begin to feel that harm. You're going to feel this discomfort. You're going to feel when things are not quite right. And not that you feel it so you can practice more and I don't feel it anymore. It's this awareness. It's where the wisdom comes in. But in the moment, in our actions, if you notice that something's unskillful or unwholesome, I'm going to release that right then. Because there's craving in there. That's why it's feeling unwholesome or unskillful. So we're going to try to abandon that craving or attachment or trying to get our way. And instead, begin to cultivate non-harming.
So then there will be fewer mental formations, sankharas. They'll start to dissipate.
No.
All right.
Wait, I'm gonna say one more thing. The wisdom piece. The wisdom piece is the piece that we're really talking about right now. We're not talking about the action part so much. That comes after the present moment, after next month's consciousness. And we're not talking about the development of mental, our meditative qualities. What we're talking about is this right intention, right view, beginning to learn to see, how can I have this intention to be kind regardless of whether I'm kind or not? Just this cultivating this act of being kind. Ultimately, what I think happens is that this mental sankharas of right intention begin to apply in our lives. So sometimes my actions are keeping in line with those right intentions. But sometimes, even now, I can do things that are outside of what I would want to do. And I'm, you know, in that moment making amends. But there are noticeable times now where I will not do certain actions anymore. I don't even worry about it. It's not going to happen. That kind of unmovable formations begin to happen. But if you think, is there going to be a time when it's all going to kind of all line up? That's when you're operating back out of this ignorance, because it would be like saying, I'm an arahant or a Buddha and I don't crave and cling anymore. Because once you crave or cling or want something, you are setting in motion suffering that's ultimately going to be, you're going to have to pay the piper on. You just don't know when you're going to pay the piper. You don't know how you're going to pay the piper. So in the present moment, you try to do your practice of doing right action in the moment. But it can't be about how do I line it up so that I don't do any more unwholesome acts anymore. I think that is the main thing I want you to take home. The idea is, I know everything in us says, I don't want to do any harm anymore. I don't want to do any more unwholesome acts. But that's not realistic if we're not an arahant or we're not a Buddha. We are going to do unwholesome acts. Our responsibility, it's not us that's doing it. It is the nature of this conditioned world that we live in. It's going to be coming. So instead of worrying about how do I not do this, it's beginning to have this right view that begins to see this is appearing now because it's conditioned from the past. And in this moment, as soon as I see it, I'm going to abandon it. I'm going to let it go. And I'm going to vow not to have it again. That act is stepping into adding these good karma, good, I don't like that word good, but it's adding our good mental formations. But all formations are still based out of ignorance. All these mental formations are based out of some line of ignorance. Because when we get to a point where we no longer are acting out of us at all, and our actions, to put it bluntly, the way somebody described it in one of the commentaries I read, we would have to act from a place that we would never expect a benefit or a reward, that we would act from pure compassion and kindness, and that all of our actions would be for no other reason than the furtherance of wisdom and peace. So there's no me there. There's no self there. That's an arahant. That's a Buddha. Most of us are going to act with some degree of selfing in there, which is connected to ignorance, which is leading to more suffering. But even though that's happening, simultaneously, we are going to cultivate this good karma. Do you see? Not really. Just ask me afterwards.